drugs and they're playing poker.
PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert. And welcome to day three of the one-year anniversary Pigeon Supper Picnic.
Yes, and today we have gas.
You know, you have to come up to day three of these picnics. And, you know, you got to expect
lots of fried foods and cold ones. And, yeah, it sort of hits you about day three. No, actually, they got our gas service restored last night. So the local utility.
the yokel utility. They were very nice.
Has done a fine job. Yes, the gentleman was very nice. He wasn't even scared off by the wall of paranoia behind us here.
I heard you talking to him, though. He didn't sound like he was quite into it. In fact, he looked a little afraid as he left.
He was not entirely on board with the program, but that's okay. Well, we slipped the electronic tracking device in his pocket when he wasn't looking, so we know where he is.
All I can say is that conversation with him last night, the wall of paranoia that he no doubt was taking secret photographs of,
yes,
may have something to do with the gentleman who was outside your window at work today.
That could be. That was really a bizarre situation. As I was working today, just before lunch, I noticed a fellow outside my window wearing a just plain blue jacket, what looked like blue work trousers, holding a cell phone to his ear. And I thought, okay, is this guy with Verizon? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? He was standing out there talking on the cell phone and trying to stare in through the one-way glass on our building. Well, it's not entirely one-way, but it's reflective. You know, it's got a coating on it to keep the sun out. And he was looking right up in there, not noticing, I guess, the fact that I was sitting about 2 feet away from him. And he was talking very loudly. Of course, since he was through the double panes of glass, all I could hear was this. I was talking on a telephone. And I'm trying to talk with potential customers on the phone. And then he closes the phone, puts it in his pocket, and from somewhere produces a squeegee. I don't know where he was holding the squeegee because I didn't see him carrying a bucket or anything. It's just suddenly he had a squeegee in his hand.
It's like those guys from Highlander that suddenly whip out the sword.
And so he washed the window with the squeegee. Now, we have a lot of glass. Our building is one of those modern 70s era constructions that has glass all the way around. I've got floor-to-ceiling window practically next to me. And he washes the window next to my desk, wipes off the squeegee, stops, goes and gets in his truck, and drives away. What's it? He just washed the one window. Now, bear in mind that it was raining in St. Louis today.
That's what's really
washing
funny.
A window in the middle of a heavy rain seems kind of pointless. I thought, while he's at it, maybe I could have him wash my car. I mean, it would make just as much sense. So, anyway, stood outside my window, reported back to home base on his cell phone, and then washed the window outside, maybe to get a better surface for the little laser so they could listen in, I suppose.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well,
an interesting day.
He was really good at his job. You'd never suspect
him,
would you? Blended right in.
He was from Wackenhut's new intelligence division.
Oh,
well,
gosh.
It's Wednesday, March 8th, 2006, and it is what time is it? Oh, wow, we're getting an early start tonight. Only 6:40 Bunker Standard
Time. I know.
Time.
Well, Murphy said it was time to go to bed, so we put the dogs to bed. And you know, he used to do this with the girls, the ones that we lost right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And he would insist that their bedtime was when it got dark.
Yeah.
Now, if that was 4:30 in the winter time, that's when they went to bed.
Yeah.
So tonight, it got dark. He gave us the look.
Mm-hmm. It is bedtime. And so he's trying to work on Java to see if he can get Java to sleep through the night.
Mm-hmm.
She did better last night, so we're hopeful.
She slept till 5:04.
We are hopeful.
I know.
Well, what's topping the news today? I was kind of wrapped up in things at the office and didn't really have a chance to keep up what was going on.
You know, there's a lot going on, as every day has lots of news in it. Some is interesting. Some is out there.
Mm-hmm.
The Susan Polk murder case, that trial, once again, tried to get another start today. Mm-hmm. And for those who have forgotten, maybe it's tickling your brain. Oh, Susan Polk, that sounds familiar. Well, it was the Scott Dolezky murder that took out Vitale, Pamela Vitale.
Pamela Vitale.
Who is the wife, the unfortunate wife, who is now dead, the attorney for Susan Polk.
Daniel Horowitz.
Yes.
Felix Polk, Susan's late husband, was her therapist.
Mm-hmm.
He was about 40 when she was 15 and first met. And apparently they had intercourse for the first time when she was 16.
Yeah, he was apparently a bit of a Svengali.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very impressionable. She reported that he did molest her, but they ended up getting married. They had children.
Mm-hmm.
She claimed that the children were being molested. He said that one child was molested by someone else. He gave a big speech on it. Anyway, she is on trial now for murdering him, for allegedly murdering him. And it has certain satanic overtones.
Right.
That were starting to come out the day that Pamela Vitale was killed.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Pamela Vitale was bludgeoned to death. At least that's what prosecutors charged. They made a point when her case, when her murder was made the news, they made a point of specifying 39 times.
39 times, and that a Lorraine cross.
And a Lorraine cross
had been carved into her back.
Which is a symbol that was popularized by Aleister Crowley, but dates back to the alchemists of the Middle Ages.
Right, but now that whole, the press is playing down the satanic, quote-unquote,
they always
element.
Do. They always do.
It's almost as if it's in the press initially for maybe a couple of reasons, because the news gets out, and what do? You know, as it comes out, it's live, and what do you do with it? But the other one is perhaps it was intentionally allowed to make a point to Daniel Horowitz.
Right.
Back off, buddy.
Very possibly. But another classic case of how the satanic aspect is being downplayed is the Hosanna Church sex abuse case down in Louisiana. The earliest stories reported many occult overtones, including ritual garb and, confessions, apparently, by a couple of the people involved, a couple of people who were arrested. But even occult symbols drawn on the floor of the church down there in Louisiana. But when it went to the grand jury, the police dropped those charges and said there was no evidence of any occult activity at the church.
Well, you know, when we have talked with Russ Dizdar, he's shared with us that his contacts with police officers has taught him that they are, in fact, ordered. I'll use that strong of a word to play it down.
Because there is a preconception in our Western society that this sort of thing just doesn't happen here. We know that this sort of thing doesn't happen, and we've known ever since we invented science. Since the Enlightenment, basically. And it's really ironic that in America, which professes to be a Christian nation, and there are people who will get very angry if you try to claim otherwise, there is a preconception that the supernatural does not interfere in our mundane daily lives. And when cases like this pop up with occult overtones, they're glossed over or attributed to the product of deluded or sick minds.
Well, you know, in a related story that's on Watcher Magazine today as well is a story coming out of Russia. No, sorry, Germany. Story of a woman who is now going to be charged and go to trial for the murder of 8 of her 9 babies. She originally was charged with all 9 babies' deaths, but apparently, sadly, one of them has now passed the statute of limitations. So that count had to be removed. But according to the police who arrested her, the police had discovered the remains of 9 infants last July buried in flower pots and a fish tank in the garden of this woman's parents' home near the Polish border.
And the sad thing is that under German law, because of the expiration of the statute of limitations on that one infant, The 40-year-old mother now faces a maximum of 15 years in prison instead of a life sentence. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm sure that there is a lot to this story, and I this is the first I'd heard of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to do more research on this to find out. And I did some today, and I couldn't find much on the story, to be honest with you. It's being really kept under wraps. Perhaps Germany is a little more judicious about what they allow the press to publish right away. But I found it interesting that it was 9 babies, and then there's another story about 18 bodies found in Iraq. 18 is 666. 9 is 33. 3 times 3.
Oh.
These are, you know, and you could easily say, well, you guys are just grabbing numbers out of thin air. Well, the fact is we may be doing that.
Yeah.
But when you start to realize the numbers that are important message numbers to the occult, then you can't help seeing these. It's like when you buy, when we bought our current car, the Hyundai Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, I was seeing Santa Fe's everywhere. I still do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I really hadn't noticed them before we got one. So when you become aware of something, that's when you start to see that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think you do too, as honey, I tend to look at numbers that are in stories.
Right. And what's really interesting is if you will do a Google search or go to Google News or Yahoo News or some news search engine and just type in the number 13. And see how many stories pop up with the number 13. Now, we haven't done a statistical analysis to see how that compares with, you know, other random numbers.
8.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem that when you run that kind of a search, there are suddenly an awful lot of stories that pop up with 13 dead here, 13 dead there. 13
a lot
dead
of murder
here.
Stories
yeah.
contain 13 as a number. Yeah, that's true.
It really is weird.
A lot of airplanes that crash.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have 13 as one of the numbers, 13 crew members or something.
Right, and sometimes they'll go out of their way to mention it. Instead of saying, say, 27 people died, 13 crew and 14 passengers.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen
mm-hmm.
things of that nature, too.
Yeah.
So it is really interesting.
It is. Well, the story coming out of Iraq is related to what we've been talking about over the last few days with regard to someone fomenting civil war. These bodies were found on an Iraq bus. They'd been shot or strangled, and The article that comes from BBC News says that this sort of dumping is a sign of Sunni on Shia violence,
mm-hmm.
or the other way around.
Right. Again, they want to provoke and play up the fact that Shias and Sunnis are at each other's throats. And if you remember our story last night, the blogger in mm-hmm. Iraq, allegedly in Iraq, Sam Hammurabi, not his real name, who is putting stories out there that appear to be designed, again, to assign blame for violence to either one sect or the other. And you can only assume that it's because he's hoping that this would provoke reaction from the
mm-hmm.
other side.
Yeah. Well, there's stuff going on everywhere. There's a story in here that I think is really interesting because it takes a different... It's a different spin on what we get out of Israel versus Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that Jewish settlers are actually harassing Palestinians. And this article, which is pretty long, so you have to be sure when you go to Watcher Magazine that you look at the bottom of the teaser part of the story and click on read the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Very oftentimes an important story, we'll put the entire one up there, but of course at the end we always put a link to the original article so
right.
you can see we honestly did find this from a legitimate news source
right.
or a very respected blogger. We
mm-hmm.
only put in bloggers that we think that we are very comfortable with. This story talks about how the Israeli military is overflying the Palestinian people and intentionally causing sonic booms. Now, I grew up with sonic booms.
Mm-hmm.
They were all the time because I grew up near an army base and there were
mm-hmm.
flights there and probably an afternoon didn't go by without 3 or 4 sonic booms going overhead. I
mm-hmm.
got to where I just ignored them. However, if people were had been bombing my home camp, I think if I heard a sonic boom, it
make
would
you a
be
nervous.
Disturbing.
Yeah.
yeah. So if indeed this sort of thing, harassment in the form of something that appears to be benign,
mm-hmm.
If that sort of thing is going on, then, you know, I just think that that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And again, it seems to be a case of wanting to stir things up for some purpose other than just living together peacefully and reaching a peaceful solution. There are parties that have a vested interest in keeping things stirred up there. Mm-hmm. We see it here in the United States, and I'll step out on the politically incorrect limb here. We have parties in the United States that similarly find it beneficial to themselves, that is, to keep different groups at each other's throats.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking specifically about some leaders in the so-called civil rights movement who find it useful to keep African-Americans and whites or European-Americans, black and white Americans, at each other's throats and angry at one another because they benefit from that.
Could be Christian and non-Christian.
It's, you know, divide. It's the Hegelian dialectic. You pit two sides against one another, and from that comes the desired result.
Divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer, right.
Well, this article also talks about how, and again, we're not saying this is really happening. This article alleges that Jewish settlers are terrorizing Palestinians with impunity, attacking children on their way to school, and destroying farmers' trees and crops. This is coming out of the UN. This isn't just somebody blogging and saying, I'm accusing, you know, Jewish settlers of doing this. This report comes out of the UN.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have my doubts as to how objective the UN is when it comes to this situation, too. But it's difficult to be totally objective when you're trying to look at what's happening in Israel.
I know. Just wondering what the UN doesn't make statements like this without some sort of a reason.
Right, exactly. And that's the key point, is whether or not it's happening. The point is, why is this story coming out of the UN now? And what is the intended result of the story? That's how you have to look at the news, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason we look at the mainstream news and then step back and then criticize it often.
Because it's fun.
Well, yeah.
But poke. Poke.
Yeah. Do you mind if I just stand here and poke you with a stick?
Okay.
But beyond that, it's because it's useful to know what they want us to think and how they want us to react. And we have to try to dig a little deeper. And, of course, we're limited in what we can do. The best thing we can do is just cast as wide a net as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, try to sift our news from as many sources as possible and try to analyze based on the information that we're given and trying to see past the spin. But part of analyzing the news is trying to figure out what it is they are trying to get across through the news story. What do they want us to think?
Well, analysis takes me right into the next story, honey. You're so brilliant.
Oh, the waves.
The waves. Al Gore did invent the internet, didn't he?
Well,
he did.
I read that someplace.
Well, apparently his great IT prowess isn't enough because the Democrats have decided to jump on the bandwagon. They are going to start data mining. A group of well-connected Democrats led by a former top aide to Bill Clinton is raising millions of dollars to start a private firm that plans to compile huge amounts of data on Americans to identify Democratic voters and blunt what has been a close Republican lead in using technology for political advantage. Oh, can you imagine that?
It is interesting that the leader of this effort is Harold Ickes, who was deputy chief of staff in the Clinton White House.
The Clinton White House that was supposed to be so savvy. When they came in, they upgraded to Macs. Now, how much more savvy can you be?
Well, you know, it's not the size of the laptop, it's how you use it. Well, this is interesting because it points out one basic truth. Data mining is only evil when it's the other side doing it.
That's right.
Because they screamed bloody murder, and some Republicans did too, when it got out that the Republican National Committee was asking for rosters or membership rosters of churches. And I think this came out of North Carolina. They wanted to know who the church members were so they could start targeting members of Christian churches.
Right, because they're going to lean to the right.
Mm-hmm. And so we need to firm up that base and get those good church-going people to vote Republican in the upcoming election.
Those church-going people.
And a lot of people were screaming about that, but then it turned around. And, of course, there was a story that came out last fall about the ACLU, also data mining, to enhance its fundraising efforts.
Just so you know, we do not data mine.
No.
Peeringintodarkness.com.
No, we don't have the time.
No, we don't have the tools. That mining stuff, that's tough. You got to have the little hat, a little light on it, a
we
canary.
Don't even know where all of our data is.
Trust me, I don't know where most of it is. Well, you know what? We've got an attorney general who says that, that the Geneva Convention is probably not really relevant anymore.
Outdated, huh?
Yeah.
Old-fashioned?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who leans to the right.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
And once again, goes to prove that an attorney general who bends the Constitution around to fit whatever he or she wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That is
only
that is
evil when it's the other party's attorney general.
Forget Janet Reno.
Exactly. And let's just imagine who Hillary Clinton might appoint as her attorney general, should she become the next president of the United States.
I shudder. You know, when Ashcroft was in, he took so many spitballs from both sides after a while. And frankly, when Gonzalez went in, I think a lot of people, you know, said, oh, you know, he's going to be great.
Yeah.
Why? What did you know? I knew nothing about this man.
Well, true. But I think a lot of people who looked at what he had done when he was counsel to the president said, you know, people, he's the guy who basically wrote the opinions for President Bush that led to a lot of the decisions that were made during the president's first term. A guy who said that torture isn't exactly a bad thing as long as it's done for the right reasons. And so there were people in the Patriot media, Alex Jones in particular, was very vocal in saying, hey, Gonzalez is not going to be better. If anything, he's going to be worse than Ashcroft. And
well, kudos to him for saying it early on.
He did. He was early on that. But again, it points out the trap that most Americans have fallen into of defending their side regardless of what their side is doing, because Republicans or conservatives who were screaming at what happened with Elian Gonzalez and at Waco and Ruby Ridge during the Clinton administration are now bending themselves into pretzels defending torture, defending those CIA renditions, which incidentally started during the Clinton years, and defending the existence of, you know, the detainment camp at Guantanamo, where guys are basically being held indefinitely without access to counsel.
There are people who've been there for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. And now, again, I'm not defending many of those people who were scooped up because they were hanging out with the wrong kind of people. But we've got the case of the fellow who was held, the dirty bomber, Jose Padilla.
Yes.
Who's finally, after 3 years in solitary confinement without ever being charged, is finally being brought to trial so as to avoid, you know, a challenge before the Supreme Court of the legality of holding somebody without habeas corpus, an American citizen.
They charged him with something other than they originally...
Right.
And I can't remember the exact charge.
They charged him with
about something.
Conspiring to commit terrorism.
Well, you know, that's another segue. Thank you so much, because the Patriot Act is all but done, folks. All he has to do is sign it now.
Yep.
It apparently has some interesting points to it, and one of them is I read this on another site. I have not posted it because I've not been able to verify it, but my understanding is that there is a provision in there that says that if you contribute financially to a known terrorist, that it is prosecutable. Now, that sounds like a duh, right? Well,
okay.
Who would give money to that? Well, apparently there are situations in Iraq, in Africa, in nations that are under tremendous pressure, where there are true civil wars going on, that in order to get your wife out of prison, in order to keep your family from being macheted, you have to pay off
right
that organization. And those people who make the payments mm-hmm. are being arrested. Now, granted, the Patriot Act is local.
Uh-huh.
So imagine martial law. I mean, there can be a worst case scenario here. And that's the blogger. I found this in a blog site. And so I'm not, again, don't take this as gospel. This is what I read. And I thought, oh boy, if this is a sign of what's in this Patriot Act, then please. It's the notion that legal language is as flexible as the people want it to, the prosecutors want it to be. If Bush wants to take a phrase like that, mm-hmm. or Gonzalez, then, well.
Well, it is, and I think we've got examples throughout history of how things that are really despicable can be made legal.
Mm-hmm.
The Final Solution in Hitler's Germany.
Yes.
That was all legal.
Yeah.
It was all legal.
Uh-huh.
Here in the United States, it was legal to count African Americans as 3/5 of a human.
Well, what
for
was
quite
this?
A while.
Yeah, that is hideous. Well, what was the story that was in Watcher yesterday? I'm going to have to go to my managed key here and let me see if I can just type in the search box and see if it'll bring it up.
Very handy little
Holland.
Feature. Watcher
it's
magazine.
Holland. Holland to allow baby euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
That was posted a couple of days ago.
There was a study that was released last year, by the way, that said that doctors there have been doing it illegally for some time.
Mm-hmm. But now it's legal.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that hideous?
And here's the thing. Where do you draw that uncrossable line? Okay, mm-hmm. before it was, your baby's sick, my baby's suffering. Can we just put her, him out of her, mm-hmm. her misery? Okay, now it's legal. We can do this. Okay, the next one is, well, my baby is crippled.
Mm-hmm.
My baby won't have a normal life. My baby is blind. My baby won't have a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
My baby is blue-eyed. I wanted brown.
Yeah.
Where do you draw that line?
I can't afford a child at this time.
Yeah, that could happen too.
Well, you know
and,
what?
And then you get to the guy who was the guy who said that up until 2 years of age that a child really isn't sentient anyway.
Oh, that's the bioethicist from Princeton University, Peter Singer.
Yes.
See, he's a guy who adopts the position of the abortionists, but takes it to its logical conclusion. It is not logical to say that it's all right to kill a child up until the moment that it comes out of the womb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, the 6 inches difference in location makes that much of a difference?
Yeah, so, I don't know that I'd say it takes it to the logical conclusion. I'd say it takes it to the radical conclusion.
Well, to the radical conclusion. Yeah. I mean, at least he's being honest. He's saying, you know, your parent should have the right to kill a child up until, you know, X amount. Well, you know, why draw the arbitrary line at 2 years? Well, that's no different than the arbitrary line of saying
exactly.
At the moment
of
birth.
He's only a week older than 2 years. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So the Dutch apparently have adopted Singer's, or at least they're on the path of adopting Singer's mm-hmm. proposal. That's sort of like having a money back, 24-month money back guarantee.
Isn't that?
It is repugnant.
It is.
It is repugnant.
It really is.
And that's what happens when you take God out of the equation and you make man the ultimate determinant of right and wrong. Once you place nothing above you, you know, or we as humans place nothing above us as the ultimate arbiter of right and wrong,
mm-hmm.
there is no ultimate judge, no omnipotent judge to whom we must answer someday. This is what we get. Because then anything can be rationalized as right if you or I are the ultimate authority.
Is it Ravi Zacharias who is so wonderful when it comes to philosophy?
Yeah.
He tells this story of being on a college campus and defending the notion that there is a truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that relativism is wrong. And a student stood up, and this is a story many of you listeners have probably heard, but the student stood up and said, but why should I have to follow your morals? Where do you get off telling me how to live? I can choose how to live. And Ravi's response was, well, in a world of relativism, yes, you're correct. You can choose how to live, just as I can choose how to live. And if I choose to kill you right now, and I believe that that is right and that is moral, then who is to say I'm wrong?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the student just, well, you can't do that.
Why
That's
not?
Wrong.
Yeah.
Who says?
Well, me. Well, yeah, but what makes your definition of right and wrong any better than mine?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. The humanist perspective is illogical. And ultimately, it's interesting that many who adopt a humanist worldview don't even realize that despite their claims that they can be just as moral as those who follow God, that they are really adopting and borrowing, hijacking, if you will, Christian morality,
mm-hmm.
and claiming it as their own. Well, if I am the ultimate determinant of right and wrong, anything I can decide anything is right, anything is wrong. I mean, there is no, and then it boils down to who's got the most guns, basically. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say is if you got no God saying, okay, this is the way it's supposed to be, this is the way you ought to live, this is the way it's right to live, anything goes, and there is no logical basis on which to live any other way. I mean, let's face it, if there's no God and there's no ultimate judge that we have to answer to once we're done on this time-space continuum, then we might as well grab for all the gusto we can right now.
That is so true, and I think that's a good place to close for today. You know, we've covered a lot of stories today. We've covered a lot of ground, and a lot of the stories, again, they're just, let's face it, a lot of the stuff that's in the news is really dark.
It is.
And that's why we say we peer into darkness, and we try to look at what's behind all of it,
mm-hmm.
because there really is a common thread that connects all of these things, and that's the spiritual warfare that's going on that Derek was just alluding to. So you know what? If you have any questions about that, mm-hmm. if you want to call, I mean, if you want to write to us and tell us you're with us, you're in our corner, you've got a sandwich for us, you brought lemonade. Send us a note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Oh, before we go, I do want to mention one other thing. Just a brief left turn. Carl Schwartz, who's been a guest a couple of times with us now, was on John Stantmiller's program on the Republic Broadcasting Network yesterday with Major Doug Rocky.
Did they have sandwiches?
No. Time didn't allow for
it. But Doug Rocky was with him. That's great.
Because he was the Army's number one guy when it came to cleaning up the depleted uranium mess left behind in the first Gulf War. And he lays out the facts, the figures, and the impact of depleted uranium. And I will put links to the MP3 files that for the archive program. Republic Broadcasting Network does an excellent job of archiving everything, and it's an excellent resource. You really should check them out. A number of excellent programs, but yesterday afternoon, John Stantmiller outdid himself. It was an excellent program. What I heard of it, because I was at work and driving home during the second half of the show, but Doug Rocky is somebody who speaks with authority, someone who was there and someone who is himself suffering the effects of DU. So I will put that in the show notes and highly recommend that you give that a listen. And now back to our regularly scheduled podcast closing, our forum, which is always open at peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
Well, it's been a lovely evening. I'm going to take my napkin. I'm going to dab the corners of my mouth. And I think we'll go over and take a nap in the shade. So till tomorrow, this is Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Bye, everybody. Going to step up to the microphone.